everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. Tom, is your arm sore after getting your first shot yesterday?
The first thing he asks me is...
Yeah, well, why not? People want to know. You know, everybody knows, did you get the shot?
Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo, I got my shot. And I'm so far not really feeling much effect. The arm is not really sore, although I feel it
sure.
if I touch it like
yeah.
a bruise.
Yeah.
But I've been told that, oh, yeah, well, wait for the second shot, buddy.
Oh, boy.
Then you'll feel it. Then
yeah.
you'll get it.
That's what people tell me, and we've got that coming up next week, so... I will be able to report to you, Tom.
Oh, that's when you're getting your second one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Yeah.
A week from today, we can turn the tables, and you can ask me how the second shot went.
Well, if you show up that day,
yeah.
the next day.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I've got a full schedule planned as usual. Anyway, we'll see. It's Buckmaster on this Thursday, March 4th, 2021. We're in our 11th year. Here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our radio station is 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now to the Green Things Studios. Steve Christie is here, Republican supervisor. He's one of five Pima County supervisors. His district is number four. Mr. Christie, how are you?
I'm great, and it's always great to be here in studio with you, Bill.
Thank you very much. I was thinking about you because you do represent the Mount Lemon people, and yesterday we had the spokesperson for the Department of Forestry on the program, and she's saying now fire season isn't just a season anymore. It's a year-round deal, and they've already had in the state fighting wildfires, and boy, oh boy, one thing we don't need is another horrible situation up on Mount Lemon.
No, and it was a double whammy for the businesses and residents up there, as you know, between the COVID and shutting down the highway as a result of the Bighorn fire and how long it took to recover from that. One good thing is the Mount Lemon Catalina Mountain Range did have substantial snow and rainfall that they hadn't had in prior years. So that is a positive. On the other hand, as you noted, we have had a number of fires already in our state and in our county. We just had one in the Santa Rita Mountains several weeks ago. Certainly there, I don't believe that their rainfall or snowfall was on the level that Mount Lemon and the Catalinas had in Summerhaven. But nonetheless, it is disconcerting that every year it seems more and more sooner that we have to be prepared. The community up there has a very robust program called FireWise that make sure that they're taking all the necessary precautions to prepare for fires. And it seems that they've got to do that earlier and earlier every year, such as making their yards clear of debris and making fire exits available and doing everything that they can to be, as the term suggests, fire wise. And it's been very successful, and I'm very, very proud and admiring of the diligence that they go through. But yeah, we just, we've got to keep our fingers crossed. We've got to keep on top of things and making sure that the Summerhaven community, the Mount Lemon area, and the Catalina Mountains as an entire range are vigilant, and that we make sure that we do everything we can to keep our great Sky High Island and our great resource here that is the playground of Pima County and the state and the country and the world safe from fire.
And we have had some trails recently opened up there. They were repaired from the fire, so that's good news. People can go up there and recreate. Are some of the businesses reopened now, Steve Christie?
Yeah, they're all reopened. They also
some
have
of their restaurants.
Restaurants are going well, and we have, of course, two new construction projects that are almost in completion. One is the new lodge up there that is going to be very much
upscale
and have all sorts of amenities that you wouldn't expect in Mount Lemmon, but they're going to be there, and it's going to be quite spectacular and quite extensive. And then there's another project that is a little bit smaller in scale and a little reduced in the price range, but it's family oriented, and it's something that's been needed. Both have been needed in that area for a long time, and it's going to be a great asset. And I think this is going to be a real driver of even more tourism and industry for the businesses up there, and an ability for the community to really enjoy Summer Haven and Mount Lemmon.
Yeah, it's really needed. I remember my first time coming out here as a student to the University of Arizona in the late 60s. The first time I lived in Tucson, we would go up to Mount Lemmon. There was the Mount Lemmon Lodge.
Yes.
Up there, and it was really neat. You know, you could sit around, like they had a big fireplace, and I think there was some lodging there as well, but it's been off and on really since the 1930s up there with lodging. And it's overnight lodging is needed there, because previously there was no hotel per se. You just had to kind of go the Airbnb route and rent a room.
Yeah,
or a cabin.
Well, the lodge is set for opening in the spring of 2022.
Really?
And the hotel, hopefully, everything working well, is going to come up next month.
Good.
So these are exciting openings and exciting projects, and we have to really take our hats off to that community, because they went through such trauma last summer, and they stuck to it, and they stuck with it, and this is a great respite and opportunity for them to regain some sort of balance and bring back the economy in that area that's so essential to our community.
I'll tell you, I may be looking into a room up there for a weekend this
summer. Well,
get some cool air.
We know the folks that are in charge of it.
Good.
So drop our name and see.
I will see if it helps.
Yeah.
All right. Some COVID-19 restrictions in Arizona may be eased, according to Dr. Christ. She is the Arizona Health Director, Dr. Kara Christ. What about Pima County? Is it time to seriously take an evaluation of where we are?
It is, Bill. We've seen a precipitous drop in cases and transmissions and infections and hospitalizations. It has declined rapidly over the last month to the point where now I think, as we're seeing in other states and nationwide, that there is a definite justification to really analyze lifting restrictions and opening back up our economy. The economy has suffered. Businesses have suffered. People have been laid off. Folks that have had businesses in their family for generations have been closed and shuttered and gone bankrupt. It's just been a horrific situation in the business community. We talk about vulnerable communities, and there are so many as a result of the pandemic, but nobody speaks about, I think, one of the most important communities that's vulnerable, and that's our business community. And they're the ones that have had these restrictions imposed upon them that have really hampered their operation ability. When you talk to a restaurant owner and you say you must reduce your capacity of customers by 50 or 75% from normal, well, that's 50 to 75% of gross revenues that they've lost. And as you know, restaurant profits are razor thin. And when you're talking about a 75% reduction in gross profits, there's very little left. And
they operate on such a small margin.
And they do.
They really do.
And there obviously have been studies that restaurant businesses have the highest rate of failure mm-hmm. of any other industry. And then you add to it all these restrictions, plus the fact that certain restrictions have been deemed unconstitutional. For instance, curfew restriction.
After 10 curfew in Pima County.
That's been ruled at this point unconstitutional. And here, even after that, and after all of the damage that curfew restriction has inflicted upon the business community, just recently at a historic joint meeting between the City of Tucson City Council and the Pima County Board of Supervisors, the city council moved in front of both boards a motion, and it was passed unanimously by the city to enjoin in an amicus brief with Pima County to reestablish the curfew. And this is after it's been proven unconstitutional. And at the same time, the justification of this study of the how many people were involved in this after 10 o'clock curfew, only out of all of the businesses that were surveilled surreptitiously by county employees over a long weekend, there was 85% compliance with the curfew, which meant that only 15% of the businesses were not complying, and consequently, they enacted this curfew resolution that was later proved unconstitutional.
And there is a financial cost, too, isn't there, to keeping this thing going by appealing it?
Do any kind of legal maneuvering or action, it's a cost. And it also has a different cost, too. It's a messaging cost. What is the business community receiving as a message from Pima County when Pima County seems to be doing everything it can to keep them shut down and constricted and restricted with these impositions of demands that they curtail their business?
Well, my favorite bakery, Steve Christie, is open. They're open right now for lunch, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. People ask me, Bill, what in the heck is a Kringle? It's a Scandinavian pastry, usually in an oval shape. I've seen some that are kind of shaped like a pretzel. And they are filled, these flaky, kind of delicate layer, with some very, very sweet things like almond fillings, different fruits, custards. How does that sound to you right now, Steve?
That sounds really, really good.
A slice of that. And Tom is agreeing on the other side of the glass, because Tom already had some lunch so that he could possibly go for a nice slice of Kringle right now for his dessert. Check out Mona's Danish Bakery. They are at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. You can check it out on the website. You can make an order on the website, call ahead for your pastries, or I think best yet, walk into the bakery, pick out what you want from the case, and then enjoy your pastry or your lunch in the bakery. There's some dining there or outside on the patio. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Steve Christie will be back with me after this.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, and Steve Christie is with me in studio. Mr. Christie is the Pima County Supervisor, and he will tell us at some point during the interview how much he loves being the supervisor from District 4.
Well, why not just say it right now? I'd love being supervisor.
Yeah, and I would ask you if you're seeking re-election, but as you pointed out when I asked you last month, you said, Bill, I was just pretty much re-elected a month ago. So anyway, so where do we go now? How are we going to get this county back on track financially? And I know there, I don't know if you agree with the assertion of Mr. Huckleberry and some of your colleagues on the board that the state has really been shortchanging Pima County, but how are we going to get out of this?
Well, I'm struggling with is why is there this contretemps between the state and Pima County over reimbursement of COVID-related funds? And why, as I'm sure you noticed in the Star a few days ago, there was an article, I believe it was by Howard Fisher, stipulating the different positions that Dr. Christ has about reimbursing Pima County and what Mr. Huckleberry thinks we are owed. And I remember one very salient quote from Dr. Christ that she was describing Mr. Huckleberry as being confused. And I'm sure that is relating to the process of reimbursement. I happened to have an opportunity to ask Mr. Huckleberry at Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting, and I thought it was a very straightforward, business-related, business-oriented type of a question. I said, do you now or have you ever had an agreement detailing how Pima County will be reimbursed from the state for COVID-related expenses incurred by Pima County? Do you have a written contract or at least a memorandum of understanding? And he seemed to take great umbrage that I would ask that question. And he said, no, we do not. And I said, well, why not? And he said, in a very straightforward manner, he said, because of a thing called the pandemic. Well, I've always been taught in business, Bill, that whenever you have a transaction of any sort between more than at least two parties or more, that all of the elements of that contract are outlined and fully understood by both parties with the expectations that if a service is provided, you will get reimbursed based on that service before the services are beginning and before the bills are submitted. This was not the case. At some point, either between the county health department or Mr. Huckleberry or both, they decided that they would take testing issues upon their own shoulders and start the process of countywide testing. They had their reasons that they felt testing was the most essential element here. But by the same token, they made no provisions to ensure that the cost of these testings, which by whatever testing method that they use, and there are several, can run as high as close to $600 a test. And there was no provisions in writing or understanding or any memorandums or IGAs or anything with Pima County and the state to ensure that Pima County would get reimbursed out of the national funding that the state was receiving. And when we started realizing that the reimbursements were not coming and that we were going to be looking at a general fund deficit or at least a huge amount of some $40 million coming out of the general fund to cover the testing costs, Mr. Huckleberry felt that it was his ability to just present a bill, here's a bill to the state of Arizona, and that there should be no problem with the state of Arizona repaying Pima County. Well, Dr. Crist didn't agree with that, as did other health officials, and the governor obviously didn't. And there was, again, this conflict of understanding, and now there, I remember during this meeting...
You mentioned a special meeting that the city and county had. This came up, obviously.
That particular element of testing was brought up, but not in the reimbursement faction. That was several weeks ago. But you know, there's other ways to be tested with it that don't cost the state or the county money, and people with insurance can claim testing. And also, there are free tests available through the state that we did not take advantage of, or not as much advantage of that we could have. We used other derivatives of testing that I believe weren't covered in the reimbursement agreements, or did not follow the guidelines for reimbursement. So
your concern is that 40 million or 50 is going to come out of taken away from other things?
Certainly. I read an article in our friend Dan Shearer's newspaper
down in the Green Valley News.
And I've seen reports from National Resources and Parks and Rec that here's an example that their budget has already been cut as a result of the pandemic. And now are monies going to be taken from things such as that essential service that's supposed to be provided by the county to cover the costs of testing? So, again, going back to, I think, a simple, straightforward business proposition and question is, before we did all this and incurred all these expenses, did we have an agreement and an understanding and a full idea of what the parameters of being reimbursed by the state were vis-a-vis testing before we did it? And that did not happen. And here we're facing the possibility of not being reimbursed. And I think it's probably because we didn't follow the guidelines that were in place from the state.
Are we going to get some money, though, to cover this 40 or 50 million?
Apparently, we're going to be expecting
federal money.
Some federal money, I believe it was 40 million sometime in the next few weeks, that will allow for past expenses, and that they're going to be covering up through the 16th of March. But my understanding is that the board meeting on March 16th, there will be a discussion, if not an action item, to determine whether or not we're going to continue testing. And if we don't have the money, how can we continue testing? Plus, then you bring in the contact tracing and the efficiency of that and the cost of that, and is it really helping, especially now that inoculations are being much more freely distributed and people are getting them, as you two have just mentioned here in the studio.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to take away the focus on testing with the expense of those and make sure that we get the vaccine. As one of my colleagues on the city council calls it, the jabs in the arm.
So you're saying full emphasis now should be on vaccine and not testing.
No, I agree.
At this point.
At this point. Now, if you have symptoms and you want to know for sure, then of course, by all means, get tested. But if you don't feel any issues of your own personal health, get the inoculation.
How... from your business, your past leadership in the automotive industry, what a tough year 2020 turned out to be. The numbers just came out. New car sales nationally down 27%. The good news, used cars, you can't get a new. you can't get a nice used car right now. They're that much in demand. Yeah. I mean, you can, but you're going to pay more. It's going to take some effort.
Yeah. Historically, the new car department, the pressure for gross profit in that department in the auto industry was tightened and tightened and tightened by the manufacturers because they wanted volume. Instead of the manufacturers reducing their own profit margins to make the pricing more attractive, they would tighten the markup that car dealers had at the retail end. And
in some cases, in many cases, way above Blue Book.
Yeah.
Right now on the used cars.
On the used cars, they are way above Blue Book, and the demand for them is high, so consequently the prices are high.
Mm-hmm. But people aren't going with the new cars
not,
right now.
Not at this particular point, it seems. I'm surprised because it wasn't too long ago that new car sales showed, I think, year over year a substantial increase. So,
yeah, I think that number reflects a real bad when at the peak of the pandemic last summer.
And it could also have other implications involved as well. But I think all in all, the car business has surprisingly done very well. And I talked to my old car dealer buddies here in Tucson, and every one of them almost to the T tells me that their business is up and good, and they're making substantial profits and selling cars.
So they're happy at the store.
They're happy at the store.
All right. Steve Christie, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
All right.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster, and we're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Temperatures around 80 this weekend. Boy, it's going to be a beautiful weekend to head over to Green Things. I know you want some spring color in your garden, and how about heading over to 3384 East River Road. One of the wonderful things about Green Things, they've been in business 50 years. They're in their 51st year. If you go over there this weekend and say, you know, I want some color in my garden, I want some things that are going to do well, their people are so knowledgeable. You will leave Green Things with stuff you can plant that is going to survive in our particular desert environment. So check it out, greenthingsaz.com. And while you're there, check out Zocalo Village, all that great handmade furniture and all those beautiful pots, the Talavera pottery, their website, zocalovillage.com. Let's welcome now on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dr. David Levy. He is our contributor on science, and he's the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Educational Organization. And he is a very, very famous guy when it comes to comet discoverers. In fact, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. How many people can say they have been a part of discovery of 23 comets? That's Dr. David Levy, and he's with us now. How are you, sir?
Hello, Bill, and hello to all your listeners today.
How are things going?
This is good to be hear your voice today. Thanks for having me.
Well, the night sky has certainly been very, very, very nice. Not a lot of cloud cover. Unfortunately, we haven't had much rain this winter. But when it comes to for your observing, the night sky has really been superb.
Yeah, it really has been. We've been kind of staying home still. Wendy and I got our vaccines yesterday, the first shot. And so we're doing fine, Bill, and lots of clear nights.
You know, this time of year is a transition time of year with the spring coming on. This is kind of when we lose some of the winter. We don't lose them. They just they kind of go out of view for us. And then some of the spring and summer constellations starting to show. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And this is also the time when the constellation of Corvus the Crow is coming up with my favorite variable star, one that was discovered by Clyde Tombaugh in the 1930s, and I was able to do a lot of research on it and figure it out, and it actually goes into Helpers only about once a year, but it really is, I mean, it's an incredible sight to see when it does happen.
Do you ever think of stars as people?
Yeah, I think stars are people, too. In fact, they are born and they live and they die just like we do. And stars really are people, too. And if you study the life cycle of a star from the time of the birth of the star when it's behaving like a child and then settles down into the predictability of middle age and then gets to be a little weird again when it gets into old age, and could either end as a white dwarf star or even explode as a supernova. And that's really very exciting to see also.
So where is our own star? Is our star the sun? Is it in middle age?
Yes, it is. It's a middle-aged star, about 5 billion years old. It's a little older than we are. But we have another 5 billion to go. It's a very stable, healthy sun.
How the Library of Congress, has that been, in your years of research, has that been a valuable resource for you?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was about 12:15 on the 6th of January when Wendy and I were, I was just watching the television, but thinking it would be a civics lesson when they had a ticker on the bottom that said they were evacuating the Library of Congress, and that was the start of the insurrection over there. And it really had a personal meaning to me, because I have over 30 books and articles in the Library of Congress.
Really?
And it is, all of my books are there, including my autobiography, which didn't automatically go there, but I asked the publisher in Canada to send it, and they immediately said they wanted it, so all of my books are there right now.
The autobiography, David, if people would like to get it, how is it available, and what is the title?
Available at Star Arizona in the Northwest Tucson, or StarArizona.com. And that's how you can get it. It's called A Night Watchman's Journey.
And available on Amazon, I guess, too?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Oh. Okay. All right. It's time for the David Levy Quote of the Month. Dr. Levy, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Bill. Do you know when some 18-year-old kid sends you a poem, you think, all right, he might get better in the future. But this particular 18-year-old in World War II wrote this poem, which turned out to be one of the finest pieces of poetry ever written. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds. And done 100 things you have not dreamed of, wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. And while with silent lifting mind I've trod the high untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Very, very nice. That's very familiar, too.
Yes, John McGee.
Mm-hmm.
He was a he was in the Royal Canadian Air Force, and he wrote the poem just before he died in a training accident, and he sent it to his parents, and it stayed there for a while and then gradually became one of Canada's most famous poems and one of the most famous in the world.
Indeed. David, we'll leave it on that that beautiful note, and we will look forward to talking with you in a month or so. Thank you, and our best to your lovely wife, Wendy.
Thank you, and Wendy says hello as well, and see you next month, Bill. Thanks for
thanks
being
a lot.
There.
Dr. David Levy with us for his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show. Our live line guest, courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The counselor is in the house. He is here, Don Luce, attorney at law. He is the Buckmaster legal contributor, and we've got a couple of very interesting items to discuss with Mr. Luce right after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Repark Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Repark Zoo.
I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. Buckmaster with you on our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. I am so excited that the Land of Enchantment, New Mexico, is starting a what they call a slow rollout of reopening tourism. The folks over there, their health department, they are to be congratulated. They are number two after Alaska in putting vaccine in as many arms as possible. And I think last count I saw, one in four adults in New Mexico have at least gotten one shot. So the news is positive, and folks can start their planning and take a drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors for so many years. We've sent so many listeners over there. It's only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. What a beautiful time of year with spring coming to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Or visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. The website, southwestnewmexico.org. With us now in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Attorney Don Luce, Mr. Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. He is our legal contributor. We're very proud of that. Author of two very popular books on the law, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. And the books were so popular in the first printing, they're now in the second printing. Don Luce, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to see you. This controversy over whether or not to wear a mask in the state of Arizona now has come really full steam in front of the Arizona legislature. What is this House bill now that would, well, what would it do as far as businesses are concerned?
All right. So you're talking about House Bill 2770, which was introduced and passed this week. 2770 says that Arizona residents do not, or should say business owners, do not need to follow a mask mandate issued by a city, a town, a village, a county, that they're free to disregard any mask mandate and allow their employees and customers to operate within their store without wearing a mask if they choose to do so. And so the proponents of this bill say it's all about freedom of choice. It's about freedom. People ought to be allowed to decide what level of risk they're willing to accept. And as a business owner, if you don't want your customers to have to wear a mask in order to do business with you, then you're free to tell them that they can come in without a mask on, even if the city in which your business is located requires
a
mask.
That was my next question for you. What if you're operating like in Tucson and there is a mask requirement in the city and in the county?
Under this bill, as a business owner, I would be permitted to say to my customers, you don't have to wear a mask if you want to do business in my place, in my establishment. So It's known as preemption. It's a doctrine. It's a legal doctrine that says federal law trumps state law, and state law trumps local law. And so, under this proposal, the businesses would have the right, statewide, would have the right to decide whether they were going to require their employees or require their customers to wear a mask. And if they decided that their customers were not required to wear a mask, then the customers could enter those business premises mask-free, conduct commerce, and everything would be legitimate. So the proponent, you might not be surprised to hear, is a Republican. And
talking about John Fillmore of Apache Junction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's also a Scottsdale representative mm-hmm. who has sponsored the bill. And one of the most vocal opponents is Randall Fries,
who will be our guest here with me tomorrow.
So Representative Fries is also a physician, and maybe that gives his opinions a little more credibility.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's saying is this bill is anti-science. It's illogical. Studies have shown that both the person wearing the mask both protects himself or herself from contracting the virus as well as protecting against giving the virus. So to allow businesses to essentially eliminate the requirement of wearing a mask is doing something that would lend itself to the virus being spread more readily than if the law required that everyone wear a mask, at least until we get a better percentage of people inoculated.
Well, what happens if somebody, a customer, comes in and they get COVID and they say, well, your operation says that I don't have to wear a mask? And somebody gets sick.
Exactly. And to complicate things, your competitor may have a mask policy.
Right.
And nobody there gets sick.
Right.
And you don't have a mask policy and your customers and or employees get sick. Then what is your potential liability? Because I think there is still strong evidence, particularly in light of the CDC guidelines, that wearing a mask helps prevent against this disease, mm-hmm. against getting it and giving it. And so if you're doing business in an environment where you're allowing people to freely associate without wearing a mask, then I would suggest, and there's been no court case on this that I'm aware of, but I would suggest you have potential liability as an employer, as a business owner, if somebody does get sick or dies because of the decision that you've made to not require a mask.
Well, and this hasn't come up before the legislature yet, but you can see where this might be going with vaccines. You may see store owners, I think we've talked about this before, whether or not they can require employees to get the shot.
Exactly. So you have that part of it, which is a condition of employment.
There you
go. Or continued employment,
mm-hmm.
Where your employees, if the vaccine is available, you require that they get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all legally uncertain. I think it's a good policy, generally speaking, but then you get into situations where you may have one or more employees who have objections based upon religion or some other belief. Then you have to deal with that.
You know that's going to be coming up.
in large companies, undoubtedly, you are going to have one or more employees who have objections either based upon morality or based upon religion, and then you have to deal with those issues.
I want to move forward to the Supreme Court. Don Luce appears likely now to uphold the Arizona voting restrictions. And there's been a lot of talk in the legislature about what is called election reform, generally kind of very loosely. Where does that stand right now with these restrictions?
All right. So the history of this, if you will, very briefly, is that in 2016, the Arizona legislature passed a bill that essentially outlawed two things. It outlawed harvesting ballots from voters who don't go to the polls and don't mail their ballots in. In other words, You go around, you canvass neighborhoods.
You collect the ballots.
You collect the ballots. And then you deliver the ballots to the polling place.
Right.
The other part of this is that if a voter casts a ballot in the wrong precinct, the ballot's tossed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was thought to have a disproportionate impact on minorities, blacks, Native Americans, Hispanics. And so the law was challenged. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said it violates the Voting Rights Act because it denies people the right to vote, particularly the minorities that are disproportionately impacted. That case is currently before the Supreme Court. Oral argument was held this week. And from everything that's been reported, it looks like the U.S. Supreme Court is going to reverse the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision and reinstate the 2016 Arizona law. Now, the Supreme Court, remember, is comprised of six justices who were appointed by Republican presidents,
right.
Three justices right. by Democrat presidents. So there may be some political party line bias. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who have monitored this case believe that there's a fair chance that the Supreme Court will uphold Arizona's restrictions on voting, at least insofar as ballot harvesting and discarding ballots cast in the wrong precinct, as far as those two provisions are concerned. But then, you know, during an oral argument, Justice Kagan had some questions from the bench about, well, what about other, you know, potential voting restrictions? Because under the Voting Rights Act, the states cannot do anything that essentially makes it more difficult for people to vote, right? Because it often has a disparate impact on minorities. So Justice Kagan says, well, what if the states reduce the time for early voting? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or what if the states localities eliminate voting places?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what she's telegraphing is that if the court upholds Arizona's 2016 law that contains these restrictions we've talked about, then other states may also have laws on the books that are different,
right.
But that have somewhat the same effect of limiting the number of people who can vote. Because if you have restrictions on the books, you're going to limit the number of people who can vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the purpose of the restriction is. And then the question becomes, are you limiting the vote more disproportionately to minority voters as opposed to the general population? And if you are, then the argument is that you're violating the Voting Rights Act, which, by the way, was a piece of legislation that was first enacted in 1965 and signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson.
Right.
If you can remember back that far.
I can.
So this law...
I certainly can. I don't know.
I've heard about it.
Yeah. Okay. You heard about it.
This law has been on the books a long, long time. And it was intended when it was enacted to enforce the 15th Amendment of the Constitution, which allows for the freedom to vote without discrimination. And so this Arizona case has the potential to be a key case in this area.
Huge. Any idea when we'll get a decision on that?
Sometime this summer.
All right. Don Luce of Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Check out his two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Don, always good to see you. We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Bill.
That's it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Mr. Luce and Tom Fairbanks, I'm Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow, 12:04, with State Representative Dr. Randy Fries.